Hi, I'm Gil Headley, and I'm the proud sponsor of the Anatomy and Movement Channel. Welcome. This conference is important. It's both groundbreaking and ground-building. Literally hundreds of thousands of us have gathered here to expand our experience of embodiment, and in so doing, evolve the embodied experience of our world. Embodiment is a practice that anchors us consciously into that which is common to us all, our human body. Regardless of our differences, and we have them, we all live out our lives in a body, and we're all connected by that shared experience. I've been developing integral anatomy for the past 25 years. I believe the human body is not a problem to be solved, but rather a gift to be received and explored. Integral anatomy is an approach to understanding the whole body, which emphasizes textural layers, continuities, and relationships. We notice differences not to create separation, but to appreciate that which unites us all. I'll be presenting here on the Anatomy and Movement Channel, as well as on the main stage, and I hope you'll join me to explore the heart of inner space. And for further study with me, check out my website, gilheadley.com. When you join my site, you'll automatically receive 3 free full-length courses because I'm on a mission to share what I've learned through my own deep exploration of the human form. And I'm certain that these courses will enhance and transform your own embodiment practice. I hope you enjoy the presentation.
Welcome, Frey. We're very excited to have you. This is one of the ones that I personally was really looking forward to. Frey is the founder of the Axis Syllabus, which is a really wonderfully thought out, deep look into how we can create a more structurally sound and sustainable approach to dance and movement. Gil Headley, who we just saw there, is one of the kind of big thinkers in fascia, and Frey's approach looks deeply at the fascia and at these different lines and how we can approach things more effectively. He's also a choreographer with over 40 different pieces that he's put together, a lifelong performer, and one of the kind of second generation of people to go deeply into understanding the world of contact improv. He's someone who I've heard about through the grapevine many different times from people who dive deeply into the world of dance, in particular in the world of movement. But his thinking has application and value for people who are thinking about moving in kind of any context. So I'm very excited to learn more from Frey. And a little known fact, Frey also builds his own shoes. So something to know about Frey. So thank you very much, Frey, and I'll hand it over to you.
Thank you all for bringing me here and for this opportunity to share with so many people. I really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. A small correction. I see myself as the consolidator of the Axis Syllabus. Mm-hmm. I spearheaded the initiative to continue consolidating information in the Axis Syllabus. But I do see the bulk of what is included in that archive as information that is either out there and yet to be discovered or has been discovered and has been already observed and tested or at least anecdotally worked on or experimented on, well, at least in our century, but also going back into dim history. So I think of the Axis Syllabus as a way to organize information and not necessarily a movement approach or a movement, let's say technique, for lack of a better word. Perhaps method is probably the best thing. I don't see the Axis Syllabus as a method in and of itself. I think it can be a support for or a way to evaluate or a way to prepare for the taking on or learning new skills or cautions for certain dangers when we start learning movement. Diagnostic tools for understanding what might have caused an injury and counsel for how we could heal or avoid future injuries. But I don't, yeah. You want to say that?
It's hard to capture all the information in a short intro, but yeah. the collaborative approach and the way that you're sort of spearheading that in a way that's more about bringing the information forward from lots of different people is something I definitely admire.
I think it's just necessary. I mean, I think it's honest, but also probably is a way to avoid liability, because there's so much to be learned and so many chances to make mistakes in what I'm saying or what is being proposed, that I become more and more careful actually with how I offer what I know or what I think I know. And I think that that's also why it's so useful to work with a lot of other people from different fields as a corrective mechanism for avoiding that kind of thing, but also to continually expand and learn, expand my own skills and learn more.
Well, let's get into it.
Yes. Yeah, so the subject is looking at this perhaps more recent discovery that muscles behave in different ways depending on whether we are in a rhythmic oscillatory movement state or a still or relatively static state. So slow movement and static poses cause the muscle belly to react, whereas oscillatory or pulsing or rhythmic movement causes the tendons or the fascia to react. I don't know if this is universal all over the body, but I know that, for example, the lumbar fascia and the calf muscles, the bottom of the feet, and I think also the forearms, that the fascia reacts at least as fast as muscles do when we're oscillating, and that the muscle belly contracts isometrically. In other words, it doesn't change its length. Now, the reason why this is significant is because when we work in an oscillatory fashion, the fibers that make up the tendons start to develop a wave. They start to develop more of an undulatory aspect, and that increases their elasticity. And it also increases the amount of load that they take up when there's sudden strain on the muscle. So that means that, for example, if there's a sudden need for a dynamic shift in speed, or you pick up something heavy, or you move relatively quickly, that the load or strain will not be directly communicated only to the muscle belly across straight fibers from the tendons, but there will be some stretching first. And that's important because this is often how muscles get torn. So it also means that slow movement or still positions is not an adequate movement diet. It would mean that we would need to complement that with bouncing, with jumping, with shaking, and with rhythm, with rhythmic movement. So I thought that was a very interesting observation from the fascia community, especially the Rolfing community. And I think the person we can credit with the laboratory experiments that actually gave us the evidence for this is Robert Schleip. Robert Schleip from, and he think he has his own movement approach called Fascial Fitness. And I provided three links in the chat that lead to work done by him, but also work done by others in this area. And I'm sure if you put Fascial Fitness in your search engine, that you will find a great deal of information, links to follow that can inform you. Yes, so let's see. The format for this presentation, I thought we would do some moving. Is that allowed? Yeah?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah? All right, so what I would like to propose is that if you have the space, that you, can you see me? My goodness, it's so dark. Hold on a second, I'm gonna put on a light.
Boom, boom, boom.
Okay. So what I'd like to propose is that we work with small back and forth motions and work in the obvious planes at first. So transverse, frontal, and sagittal. And we can do that in the major body blocks, so starting with the skull, the rib cage, the pelvis, right? And then we could go for arms, legs independently of each other. And of course the arms, we would do something like this, right? If we were abducting and this, in the sagittal, right, flexion and extension. Yeah, I'm going to, okay, so then we would, once we work in the sagittal, the transverse and the frontal, we'll start bouncing or jiggling or wiggling in a more chaotic fashion. And what I'd suggest is that you stay more or less on one foot or the other while you're wiggling, so that the movement is as chaotic and as subtle as possible. Yes, and I suggest low intensity, soft, small motion, so that we're not jangling or distending, but staying within range. So we're allowing micro stretching to go on. Okay, I'm going to put on some music, and I'll see you in a little bit.
Rumbona,
You hear me, Frey?
Yes.
I hope that was was copyright free. Otherwise, we might have some trouble, but let's keep going.
Okay. I can't guarantee that. But well, I just shared my sound, so hopefully you'll have a better sound experience next time. But I do have some other music. I hope that's all right.
So we definitely have an issue if the music is copyrighted, mm-hmm. then people can track this down. It can get taken down. So okay. Just something to consider in how you want to go forward.
Okay. Will.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. Going on then, primary advice from the fascial fitness people is to bounce. In other words, to jump, or by jump I mean to lift yourself, to compress and bend, to decompress, to straighten, not necessary to lose contact with the support surface, but to invite that, and then to descend and recompress. And that's a whole process. So I don't mean the act of losing contact with the surface per se, although that is often what people think of when they think of jumping. So I mean the entire process, and that means that we could take a look at any part of it in order to practice. Now, one of the things that I often look at is the takeoff moment. So I'm going to show you what I mean. The takeoff moment requires us to antivert the torso and bend the knees, and also to swing the knees slightly out as we're bending, so that we make sure we get to the lateral side of the foot and we lift the arches of the feet. So this is a homologous bending where everything is flexed slightly, and the arms can be, if they're being used simultaneously, then they'd be taken slightly back. So this would be your primary, let's say one fundamental jump preparation. That's a two-footed jump. And of course, what we do most of the time is we jump from one foot to the other. When we walk, that's a small jump, right? We're actually jumping. So what I'd like to do is practice this homologous bend. And this idea of allowing your knees to slightly swing out is borne out by the shape of the knee itself, because the knee is asymmetrical, the inside being larger than the outside. And so the two compartments invite a slight arc as they bend together, right? Because the inside is bending slower than the outside. So that causes it to roll around like a cone cup, right? If you ever put a cup that's smaller on the bottom on the floor and rolled it, then it will roll in a slight, or it starts to begin rolling in a circle. That's kind of like your knee. So instead of bending straight forward, where the danger is that you would start to put weight then over the large toe, you slightly deviate from the straight. And that makes sure that all your toes get some weight and the arch of the foot is lifted. And the arch is really important for the jump moment, because you prime all of those structures and make sure that you pile the bones on top of each other and get in line with the hip joint, so that the load line is feeding energy back into the spine and making sure it gets distributed all throughout the system. Yeah, let me take off these big socks. Maybe you can see better. It's kind of cold here, so I'm sorry if I'm so covered, but maybe this is... So what I'd like to do is propose a short bouncing session where we start by only working on the ground, by practicing a fluid unity between skull and tailbone, by shifting the whole body around the gravity line to create a spring, rather than keeping the upper body on the vertical as we bend. And include the arms in this. And eventually, when you feel comfortable, you can start to use one of the up moments to shift. Important for the bouncing is that we leave the heels at one moment, so that the heels come off the floor, so that we start to engage the calf muscle and also work to control our way down so that we're not plummeting. And then when you change position on the ground, that you work with this controlled descent. Yes, so not lofting yourself for the moment. That's my suggestion. And then, right. Yeah.
So we do have a suggestion. If you would like to bring the music back into it, you could give us a link to the music and people could play it independently on their own computers. So that's something that just if that works for you.
It's not online. It was music that was given to me. So.
But you're not sure if it's copyrighted or not. Okay. But yeah. Well, that was.
If it's music that was given to you, as in it was original music from a band that you know, then you have permission to play it, then that's completely fine. Otherwise, I did find some royalty-free music with Latin rhythms. So there are some options.
Do you want to put something on?
I can have a look, certainly. You can let me know if it's... I haven't actually heard any of it yet. So. Okay.
Go ahead, put something on.
Do you hear that, yeah?
Yeah.
PremiumBeat.com.
1, 2, 3, 4.
We'll be right back.
I'm just trying to share audio only because we were sharing the screen as well and people want to be able to see you, so I'm working on it.
I hope you could feel your blood rising and your body getting warm, your heart starting to pump and your lungs requesting more airflow. So your body is turning into a pump and starting to spread or distribute nourishment and get rid of toxins and so on. So aiding digestion and toxin evacuation and nourishment down to the microfibers. So bouncing is really an essential fundamental, not to be excluded, I think, from your basic movement diet. We're talking about heart condition too. So heart is a muscle, needs to be activated in order to stay strong, has to perform an incredible job, which is to receive and to eject the blood to get it reoxygenated and so on. So something to consider. I think the official counsel is that people should be moving dynamically 24 hours a week. That's supposed to be the minimum. I really doubt that most of us do that. So yeah, but if you know that you can bounce anytime, anywhere, maybe you can at least approach that. Something else that is important in the bouncing is alignment. And I think I touched on this briefly with the knees, but something that is noticeable about the body is that it's not set up on rectilinear intersections. So joints are usually curved, and they're set up at oblique interface to the rest of the body, which means that when you flex, extend, et cetera, that the joints are usually suggesting a slight deviation rather than a flat plane or a single axis rotation. And of course, we have the potential to make it look as though we are moving along a flat plane or using a single axis. But oftentimes that is an external simplification that hides internal complications. So just to illustrate what I mean, the hip joint, well, this is maybe a stand-in for the femur. This would be the femoral head. This would be the acetabulum, which is the partner surface for the hip joint. And the femoral neck is at an oblique to the femoral shaft. And the femoral head then intersects with the pelvis, which is also at an oblique to the shaft. And so in order to keep the joint surfaces matched, we would have to move the shaft of the femur in a cone-like trajectory. That would mean that as the flexion would occur, that the femur would simultaneously rotate and abduct. That would mean all three axes and planes used at the same time. That's for a joint which has a very round surface, and obviously round surface. So the hip joint has all three movement choices of direction, right? Flexion, extension, rotation, abduction, abduction. And so it offers this possibility for a toroid use, right? And so you can see that in the micro also, if you take a look at the spinal joints, you take a look at the shoulder joint, take a look at these different joints, you'll see that none of them are set up on a flat. And that's something that that in a dynamic state can be very helpful when you're trying to maximize the support of your body. Matching up the joints as you move is an invitation to tensegrity, tensional integrity, which is the term that was coined by Buckminster Fuller and Kenneth Snelson. And they were observing this principle in living things, trees, other plants, animals, etc., that they combine the forces of push and pull to achieve balance and suspension, to create some independence from gravity, or interdependence, if you will. So tensional integrity is something that you can establish or lose, or loosen or tighten. And when you are falling, in other words, coming down from a jump or landing from a step, if you can establish tensegrity, then you will distribute the load and shock throughout the entire system. And that's very useful. You're using then the collaboration principle to put all hands on deck, and each hand can pull then less, and that makes the effort pleasurable. If you take monoplanes or single axis motions, then you will target one or the other area of your body with the stress. Just to illustrate that, I had a student who told me that he was hit on the head by a falling tree, and the only part of his body that got hurt was his ankle. And as he pointed down to his ankle, I saw that he was quite valgus. In other words, he was standing almost on the inside of his foot with his arch dropped. And so that was his habit. That was his way of walking also. And that was the ankle that was hurt, because it was out of line. And so that was where all that force concentrated on one part of the joint. Yes, so the same principle that I suggested with arcing your knees to the outside as you bend and returning to the middle as you stretch, that would be something to consider also in the arms and the shoulders as you flex to allow them to abduct as they rotate externally, and as you extend to internally rotate, right, so that you're not trying to go past the end range, but you're trying to keep the joint surfaces matched up. And yeah, so same with the spine. Instead of collapsing along the sagittal only, right, or on the frontal plane only, or twisting only, that you start to work in twisting diagonals. A twisting diagonal is something we know, right? So that's the twisting diagonal is the evident in the DNA, but it's also the spiral, right, or helical format for much of the organic world. And also we can see how it represented in the way galaxies form, stars move. So as above, so below. And yeah. Do you have something you would like to ask or a comment?
Sorry, failed to unmute myself there. So if you guys would like to ask questions, go ahead and drop them into the Q&A area. I definitely have questions myself. So I'm happy to fill in some questions for Frey. So one of the questions I had was pretty early on, and you know, we don't have to dig deep into this if it's a little too technical, but I was actually curious, you're talking about that the undulations that are created in the connective tissue through oscillatory movement. And I was wondering actually if you're familiar with Franz Bosch's idea of muscle slack, and if there's an interaction between these two areas of research that you've thought about at all.
No, I'm not familiar with his work. I'm sorry.
Okay. That'll be a comment.
I'll note that. The first time I heard about this was through Robert Schleip.
Yeah.
And Rakovetsky and Thomas Myers have confirmed his research. Mm-hmm. So I have to admit, I suppose I've gotten lazy. I haven't looked further.
Okay. Yeah, I'll pick that up with you. It's quite an interesting dialogue between those two ideas.
I'll definitely look.
But probably not worth it to get into here. Another question I had was about the role of pronation during toe-off in jumping and running, right? So there's the proposal of the knee going out and sort of taking us into a supinated position during the jump cycle versus the idea that there is a supination to pronation cycle that is normal in gait, and we need that stretch response in the foot. And I was curious if you had any thoughts about that.
So the foot, like the hand, is set oblique into the ankle. And like the ankle, when it flexes and extends, has an arced trajectory. So the foot, of course, has the supination and the supination, sorry, the, yes, the supination is on either end of the flexion cycle. So dorsiflexion and plantar flexion both have supination value in them. Whereas in the middle, it starts to pronate. That would be, right, that would be the way to complete the arc.
Okay. So you would see the...
So the knee, as it flexes, swings lateral. As it extends, swings medial. Yeah. The hip flexes, swings the femur lateral. And as it extends, swings medial, and then abducts again in internal rotation. The tibia, as the femur and tibia slide against each other, the tibia rotates internally.
Mm-hmm. So would that explain it? So often, for instance, when you look at...
Sorry, it's complicated. But what I was trying to say was that all of these mini counter rotations allow the bones to center.
Mm-hmm.
They correct for too much direction in one arc.
Yeah. So a lot of what you...
I'm so sorry, but you have the tibia and the calcaneus, right? So mm-hmm. as the tibia is sliding. As the tibia sliding over the talus, it deviates lateral, and as the rotation happens from the knee, then the calcaneal talus, the talar joints counter rotate to that. So you have these counter movements, and that makes sure that you have both sides of the foot that are reaching to the ground. Right, you have the medial foot and the lateral foot counteracting each other so that as you're approaching toe off, then you have the participation of both sides. Yeah, but if you slice forward, right, if you drop your knee forward, then you'll tend to go valgus. You'll tend to preload the medial side of the arch, and that can lead to dropping the whole foot structure down. Yeah, the foot is set up like an igloo. When it's set up like an igloo, then the bones are balanced on each other. Then you have the participant of the ligaments and the muscles that brace it all. But when you set it up flat to the ground, then all those little bones, like little bricks, they fall through. Mm-hmm. And then you're just riding on the fascial net rather than getting the benefit of the bones. I hope I've answered your question. Toe off is really important. That's the, you know, right. But when you're taking that step forward, hopefully you will allow the push hip to rotate towards the back leg, right? So that you have, so that you'll have a bridge that's established front to back. And you can also then allow this leg to abduct. Because if I'm gonna keep the hip socket and move the hip, then I can make sure that foot gets behind me. And then as I'm pushing off, I can allow the supination to occur. Yeah. Does that help?
I think it's pretty. It seems like there's some pretty different perspectives on this. I know I've been looking at like the research of David Gray, and they're really emphasizing the role of capturing that plantar fascial extension through pronation as extremely key to the gait cycle, and that a lot of our kind of models were, because of the potential for valgus error, works getting too far away from allowing the pronation.
Yes, permission is vital. Yeah. It's the vital part of the cycle.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and get to some of the questions that the audience has, and you and I can have a geek out some other time. So Stefan asks, can we have some insight into the Access syllabus? So can you tell us a little bit more about what the Access syllabus is?
Yes, the Access syllabus is literally a compilation of information about how to treat, prepare, train, heal. Yes, and otherwise study the body. So it's hopefully arranged in an accessible format, and it's an ongoing project. So the document is constantly being edited, and there's a forum where anyone can participate in this editing initiative. So if you want to, you can join and be a member of the Access Syllabus International Research Network. And it's a Creative Commons, I guess you would call it. So the material that's in the document is there to be used. If you feel that it's relevant for your work, if you feel that it's useful, then please do so. So the forum is for me a kind of online university where we are teaching each other and mutually, and then it provides a way to argue, agree, propose, and share also our own experiences. So if you go on the forum, you'll see that there's a teacher's corner and where we share tips and strategies for how we deal with different cultures, different bodies, how we deal with the problems of going from form to formlessness. And if you look, there's also an anatomy section where there's a curriculum that's proposed for studying anatomy, and also a physics section. And well, there's quite a bit of stuff on there. Yeah, maybe it's overwhelming. So there's also a lot of people that you can write to there, and you can certainly get in touch with me. And if you need orientation, or if you want advice, or if you have a suggestion for something that could be better.
Excellent. So we have time for just one more question. So Dance Waves has unmuted herself. She wants to ask a question live here. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, thank you. So two things. I think you already answered where to find you. What country are you from or in? And I'd like to hear, I'm in the United States near skiing situations where we're in cross-country skiing, and I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions, or if you're a skier, what you might suggest about that kind of very linear orientation.
I'm living in Berlin. Huh. I've been living in Europe since 1990, but I was born in New York. I wasn't raised there though. I was raised in quite a lot of different places in the United States until I was 17, when I started going to Europe. And I came back for a while, and then I decided to settle in Europe in 1990. I've been mostly in Germany, but I've never had a chance to ski. So I'm not sure what to tell you about that. The only thing is that usually people bend their knees in most activities that require the use of the legs. And so even if your feet are locked and the skis need to move ahead, you can still allow your pelvis to turn. You could still allow your knees to swing out. For example, if I move my hand in a linear, that doesn't mean all of my other joints have to participate. Mm. In fact, I'm probably better able to describe a linear with my hand if I allow for the compensations in my trunk and the rest of my joints.
Thank you. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Okay, so that comes towards the end of our session here. So if you guys would love to absorb this information one more time, I'd love to have a little dance with Frey one more time. You can watch this in the library for the next 48 hours for free. After that, you can purchase one of the packages. You can get the movement and anatomy package itself, or you can buy the entire conference and be able to kind of see how this links up to all sorts of other things. We will have a couple of students of Frey's as well, or people who are influenced by his work, Shira and Nuria, who are coming up. Shira's two today. So there's going to be lots of places where you can kind of study and get deeper insight into this throughout the course here. So I highly recommend checking that out. Frey, last question for you is, what is your number one tip for embodiment? More embodied life.
Yeah. I think there's no recipe, there's no button we can push for a clearer view of who we are or what we need in any moment. I don't think that there's any one method or approach that could be complete. At least that's my impression today. But what I do think is possible is that we can gradually become better listeners by experimenting with different approaches. So I would suggest that you, the first thing you might do is when you wake up in the morning, ask yourself how you're feeling. Give yourself time to move slowly so that your spine can unravel. And if you have the time to ask yourself, well, do I want to eat this? Do I want to take this medicine? Do I want to wear this clothing? Do I want to live in this space with the furniture like this? Do I really need these things around me? How are my relationships with other people? And also then, what is my body state? Do I feel uncomfortable? Do I feel like I need to do something? Do I need a bath? Do I need to go for a run? Do I need to be by myself for a moment? And when you're, and of course, I think studying anatomy is important because that is a key, at least, to orient you towards what you need to amend from the information that's been gathered on anatomy. And once you have started to get a picture of what's inside you and how it might, all those regions might be collaborating, then when you go into a movement class, that you're not just doing as you're told. That you're checking in with, you have an educated stance towards the introduction or integration of counsel.
Excellent, thank you very much, Frey. So if you want any information on Frey, make sure you grab the links out of the channel here. You can go check out the Access Syllabus, freyfiles.org. Is anything else people should know about how to find you, Frey, or anything you might be up to?
Well, if you want to join the forum, then you can come to accessforums.org, and otherwise, you know, social media, etc.